If you have ever passed through the Honolulu neighborhood of Kaka'ako, you know the work of Kamehadar. He's a local artist, specializes in murals splashing across buildings. He's also one of the founding energies behind Powwow, an annual gathering that celebrates culture, music, and art. It's centered around a week-long event in Honolulu in February, but it's also grown now into a global network. I spoke with Kamea earlier this morning, and given today's news, I started by asking him whether there is a potential role of healing for art at a time of such a massive tragedy.
Art is, to me, one of the main ways that people can express themselves, you know. So, you know, especially public art, it can really give the people a collective voice. Things like this, you know, I don't want to say inspire art because it sounds like it's a positive thing, but it definitely motivates artists to speak and give the people a collective voice, you know. I mean, people write songs, people paint, people make movies about, you know, things that move them, and sometimes they're positive and sometimes they're negative. And unfortunately, it's a real tragic event. But, you know, artists sometimes are the, you know, at the forefront of the voice of the people.
How important is the potential role of public art to help heal in a situation like this?
Public art, the main thing that it does is it creates conversations, you know, and I think the best way to heal any kind of wound is time, obviously, and just talking about it and expressing yourself. You know, bottling it up only leads to more pain and maybe more explosions later. So I think, you know, public art can help start conversations, can help, you know, maybe sometimes stir controversy, but get people talking and you know, expressing their emotions. So yeah, I think public art can be very, very helpful, a helpful tool for healing sometimes. Yeah.
That conversation about public art in Honolulu, Powwow has been going strong since 2010 and now internationally. You've been busy with murals all over town. Talk a bit about the state of public art in your mind in Honolulu these days.
I think Powwow has really grown. And I think that we've been around, you know, for a good 8 years now, close to a decade, and we've painted almost 500 murals around the world. But especially in Hawaii, I can see the difference. The main thing is just educating the public about the power of these murals, how you can lift up communities, how you can, you know, with a thin coat of paint, completely transform a building. And then at the same time, you know, people start to appreciate the, you know, that value and also look at the art itself. Okay, what does it mean? And they start to learn how to read the art. What is it? Why do I like it? Why don't I like it? And, you know, you're seeing more and more people that are becoming, I don't want to say art critics because that's kind of, you know, nobody likes a critic, but at least appreciators of art. And maybe it's people that never, you know, really gave two thoughts about it.
There's an accessibility aspect to public art, and almost an inescapable. If you're walking around Kaka'ako, you're going to see this art and react to it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, not an hour goes by in Kaka'ako now without some Japanese tourist or a Segway tour or someone taking photos. I mean, it's really grown, and people love leaning and touching the walls, and it's so different from those really sterile galleries where there's a guy in a suit who's going to yell at you if you get too close to it, you know? And I'm always the guy who gets yelled at because I'm more interested in how things are painted. So I put my nose right up to the canvas and I want to see, like, the strokes and you know, I always get yelled at. So
you don't yell at folks admiring
them. No, no. So to me, that's the beauty of it.
And there's a dynamic of that, that the canvases, the buildings, they're not, it's not a forever
No, it's a very temporal kind of thing. I mean, I actually come from a very fine art background. So, you know, I studied at the Sorbonne in Paris with very proper a sitter, you know, someone who sits and you paint them and you draw and you do underpaintings and that very proper kind of background. But most of my peers come from graffiti backgrounds. Hmm. So they come from painting in ditches and painting pillars of H3 and bombing trains in New York and, you know, very illegal stuff. But a lot of it is you're just painting in the jungle. Nobody ever sees it. And the next day somebody paints over it, or you get caught. And usually the community service for, you know, the punishment for getting caught for graffiti is you have to go buff graffiti. So you're buffing out and graffiti on overpasses and stuff. So it's a very, very kind of fleeting, temporary thing.
So what comes next for public art in Honolulu, again, from your perspective?
Hopefully expanding it into other communities and you know, more and more permanent, you know, hopefully murals that, you know, kind of become icons in the city. And, yeah, just more and more understanding of the value of it and the value in art. You know, to me, the main thing that I want to create is a community where we can keep our talent on the island. And the way that we do that is we, you know, artists have to make a living. And I have a lot of friends that they move to LA or New York because they just can't make ends meet here. The cost of living is high and there's not a lot of art collectors in Hawaii.
And so how do we bridge that gap? How do we change that,
I think just the more people appreciate something, mm-hmm. then the more they're willing to pay for it. Before, we'd have to convince people to let us paint their buildings for free, and now we get people who ask us to paint their building and pay us money for it because they see the value in whole. You know, wow, I can have this building that stands out in the sea of buildings. We just did one for a clothing company called Iolani, and they're by Ala Moana Shopping Center, and it's just this big rainbow, and it just says Made in Hawaii. And it is, you know, I mean, when you look at the before and after, it just looks like this, you know, busted old building, and now it just looks like this huge, just eye-catching rainbow that you just can't miss. And it, you know, it was a week of work and a you know, however many gallons of paint. It wasn't multi-million dollar construction, renovation, you know, all of these things. So it's a relatively easy way to really lift up a building.
And is rail going to be helpful, by the way, for that, for public art?
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's just another viewpoint. It's an elevated viewpoint. Those buildings along the rail are going to be, you know, visible, and people know it. And artists know it. So artists are always trying to get eyes on their street. Artists are always trying to get eyes on their work. So it's like, okay, well, this building that was on Kona Street now is going to be basically on the side of H1, or the equivalent of being on the side of H1. You know, so that all of a sudden becomes so much more valuable to a street artist. And then also the graffiti artists love that there's going to be a train. I mean, you saw that already. You know, a lot of graffiti comes from, you know, that, you know, New York, you know, a couple decades back when they were bombing trains, and that was kind of one of the roots of modern day graffiti. And so the fact that it's just the idea that it's a train, you know, some of the local guys couldn't help themselves and they went and bombed it. I don't know if you saw it. It's not even in service yet. They already hit it up. So, you know, and I'm not condoning or, you know, I don't want to say either way. I'm just saying that it's just artists expressing themselves, you know. And
what about for you? What's next?
You know, obviously, Powwow just keeps expanding. Mm-hmm. We're in Korea. We just finished Korea yesterday. We were
in Kobe next week.
Yeah, Kobe, Japan. You know, to me, I mean, I always tell people, I just want to leave this world more beautiful place than I found it. So, and to me, the way that I do that is through art. So the more art that I can create in my life, the better. And Powwow also helps me do that. So I have my own personal projects, obviously my personal murals where I physically, you know, I'm actually the artist. And also through Powwow, we produce murals all over the world and beautify communities and help uplift communities and inspire communities. So yeah, just more, you know, I guess is a short answer.
We look forward to the more. Kamea Hidar, artist, activist, community leader, thanks for coming in this morning.
Yeah, mahalo. Sure.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from the National Kidney Foundation of Hawaii, whose Kidney Cars program provides funding for community health and education services. Learn more about vehicle donation at kidneyhi.org.
Mahalo, Ray, and Jason, and Chad. We'll be checking back in with them on this Hawaiian Miles Monday. President Trump is coming to Hawaii, definitely not using Hawaiian Miles. He's not coming today, he's not coming this month, but in November. His exact dates in Hawaii have not been announced, but late last week the White House did say he'll be traveling to the Asia Pacific from November 3rd to November 14th. He'll be going to five countries, and the trip is built around the leaders' meeting of APEC, the Asia Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum. This year it's in Da Nang, Vietnam. I talked about the trip with HPR's Neil Conan, including what he saw as some of the highlights, and he started in Vietnam.
It is so interesting to see a United States president going to a meeting in Da Nang, of course, the major American base for many years during the war, and a place where the U.S. Navy would like to be able to visit from time to time now. But this time around, that meeting in Da Nang is going to be so interesting because the country most exercised about Chinese encroachment in the South China Sea is Vietnam. And the two countries have been at it back and forth, each sending exploratory oil rigs into areas claimed by the other. And these are the two countries most, the Chinese have been militarizing, though they won't admit it, their artificial islands that they've built in the South China Sea. The Vietnamese, we forget, have already militarized their islands in the South China Sea. China, years and years ago, 1974, I think it was, pushed what was then South Vietnam out of the Paracel Islands, also claimed by Vietnam, an incident not forgotten by the Vietnamese.
And if you look at a map, actually, the Paracel Islands are relatively close to Da Nang itself. And this is a situation also, there is some historical context between China and Vietnam going way
millennia.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a fascinating conversation. Of course, Vietnam is a communist country, a communist dictatorship. And human rights in Vietnam are, well, hard to come by. Their record is very poor.
Yeah.
So that is another issue that the president will have to deal with as well. But, you know, in terms of seeking an ally in Vietnam, it's, well, it's an odd alliance, to say the least.
It's an interesting time. APEC, of course, the emphasis on trade and economic development. Vietnam was one of the countries that, for a lot of U.S. multinationals some years back, adopting what they called a China plus one strategy. Mm-hmm. We'll have manufacturing in China because it's cheap, but just in case, for political reasons, if that goes south entirely, we'll need one other manufacturing base somewhere else in Asia where it's cheap. And that wound up being Vietnam for many
Malaysia and Indonesia for other people. So that policy has been really interesting. But as labor has gotten more expensive in China, more and more people are moving to places like Vietnam and, well, indeed, South Asia as well.
Other parts of Trump's trip. Also, we know he will end up in at the ASEAN summit in Manila.
In Manila, where he has, of course, extended greetings to Rodrigo Duterte, the highly controversial president of the Philippines, to come and visit the White House. Mr. Duterte has not taken him up on the offer. With all due respect for Little Rocket Man, I think Duterte and Trump are the two outstanding vilifiers, the most unexpected public speakers to be leading their countries, and startling things come out of their mouths at a highly unusual clip.
And the optics on all of this, you know, APEC meetings forever, there was sort of the running joke of the matching shirts that the leaders would have, and there's the class photo of everyone together. But there are also those side meetings, those also photo ops, for lack of better phrasing, sometimes produce as much of, if not the news, what the folks would call the optics of it.
And the emotional import that people will take away from it.
Exactly. And creating that emotional feel and the optics of, again, Trump and Duterte together. That's
and
an interesting
will
story.
He endorse explicitly Duterte's war on drugs, in which thousands of people have been killed, many under highly suspicious circumstances?
And, of course, elsewhere in the travels, Japan and South Korea, which for any U.S. president going anywhere in the area, that's sort of a stopover that with our closest allies in the region, which and where U.S. troops are based, mm-hmm. Very much part of that trip. And China as the other stop on this. But through all of this, North Korea hangs as a presence.
Yeah. It's not going to be taken up, I guess, as a distinct issue at ASEAN or APEC. Mm. It will be discussed on the sidelines, believe me.
Right.
Then, of course, it will be explicitly discussed in Japan, where they're also talking about major new weapons purchases from the United States, mm. including the Aegis Ashore system to another terminal, another system to shoot down rockets on as they approach the ground. So that will be interesting. In South Korea, it's interesting, the president there has been talking about making the South Korean military more independent from the United States after what have to be strange signals to him that he is trying to appease the North Koreans or that this might be a good time to rethink the free trade agreement with South Korea. So in the case of a war with North Korea, South Korea's armed forces come under U.S. command. He wants to change that. He also wants to build up what they call their kill chain, which is their ability to either preempt or respond to a North Korean first strike.
If you are China going into this, Xi Jinping, you will be on the other side mm-hmm. of the Communist Party Congress once every 5 years.
Far and away the most important thing for him.
Exactly. And so what are you, how are you looking at Donald Trump?
Well, you have looked at, you will have an opportunity to see how the sanctions that have been imposed these past few weeks are biting. Mm. Are they beginning to have an effect? And I think here we need to quote Vladimir Putin, who said that it's clear to him that the North Koreans would eat grass
yes.
before they gave up their nuclear weapons. So I'm not sure that any sanctions are going to convince the North Koreans to put denuclearization on the table. And if denuclearization is not at least on the table, the policy of the United States right now is we're not talking.
And that idea of whether the base rules of the understanding need to shift mm-hmm. is something that's going to come under conversation.
Indeed, indeed. And it has been China's argument all along that if the U.S. and South Korea will agree to end or restrict their annual exercises that they have, which the North Koreans hate, then maybe we could get a freeze on North Korea's nuclear and missile systems. The United States says, wait, we're not going to freeze the new normal. We're not going to freeze a situation where North Korea has the ability to strike the United States with a nuclear weapon. Whether they can or not is not yet clear, but if they can't, they're not far off.
There's a lot to look for out of this trip. If there were one or two things that you would be looking for to pull out of that?
Well, I'm really interested to see Mr. Trump's demeanor. Hmm. He did fairly well on his European excursion earlier on in his presidency.
Mm-hmm.
He will be accompanied now by a chief of staff who holds him in tighter rein and I think has a better understanding of the situation. I'll be interested to see what he has to say about the South China Sea. Before the election and immediately after the election, he was rather bellicose about China's ambitions in the South China Sea. He's been rather quieter about that since China, he needs China to help on North Korea. But the United States has resumed those provocative phonops operations where destroyers sail close to Chinese claimed islands, the reefs that they've built up with concrete and sand. So I think it's going to be the South China Sea, which I think is still a burr under every country in the region has a problem with that because China says this is ours. It is our territory. It is an integral part of China. And all those countries sincerely believe it is not.
Neil Cohn and he of the Pacific News Minute and Truth, Politics, and Power and Hawaii Public Radio. And Neil, thanks so much for spending some time.
My pleasure, Bill. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Tory Richard Limited, celebrating more than 60 years of design for the island lifestyle. Tory Richard is proud to support local community news, public affairs, and talk programming on HPR.
Stargazer Time, our weekly look into the massive universe around our very small planet. And as usual, we turn to the expertise of Christopher Phillips. We've got him on the line. Hey, Christopher, welcome back. What do you have for us this week?
Hey, Dave. It's good to be back. This week, stargazers, look out for Saturn in our southwestern skies after sunset. Before it sets at around 10:20, the moon this week will be full, so stargazing for those faint objects in the heavens will be very challenging indeed.
And this week, we've got a discovery relating to Haleakala, I understand.
Yeah. In May of this year, the Pan-STARRS Observatory atop Haleakala spotted a comet in the farthest reaches of the solar system. This comet is known as K2, and it's been making its way in towards the sun. As it does so, the Hubble Space Telescope has been observing its progress, and to the surprise of many astronomers, the comet is already active.
Is this the one that's headed towards the sun?
It's going to come close to the sun, but it's not going to collide with the sun.
And what do you mean by active? Is there something happening there on the surface of the thing?
There is indeed. As the comet gets closer to the sun, its icy surface begins to warm up. All this extra energy means that gas and dust gets excited and begins to escape into space, forming a comet's tail. What's interesting about this comet is we think it's been active for around 4 years already.
Meaning that it was so cold that for the last 4 years as it moves towards the sun, it's been melting and being active, basically.
Yeah, very, very slowly.
And so how often do comets come into the solar system?
Well, we normally split comets up into two main groups. There's long-period comets and short-period comets. The long ones have orbits that are greater than 200 years, and the short ones have orbits that are less than 200 years. What's really exciting about K2 is we think this is its first ever journey into the solar system from the Oort cloud in the farthest reaches of the solar system.
And we're going to be following its journey all the way as it progresses?
We certainly are.
And is it a big one? And is there any kind of worry that it could collide with Earth?
It is a big one. K2 is around 12 miles in diameter, which means it is a planet killer. However, we don't have anything to worry about because K2 doesn't pose a danger to the Earth. But in 2022, it may prove to be a spectacular sight for stargazers in our night sky.
Well, that's a few years off, but we'll count on you to have the report then when we get to 2022. It's Christopher Phillips. Thank you so much.
You are welcome, Dave.
And I'm Dave Lawrence. We'll catch you next week for Stargazer.
Support for Stargazer comes from Ferraro Choi, designer of the Culinary Institute of the Pacific, committed to environmentally sustainable architecture and interior design, providing research for projects throughout Hawaii and the Pacific. FerraroChoi.com.
This is a test of the live audio broadcast segment of the Hawaii State Emergency Alert System. This test message is being broadcast simultaneously over all radio and television stations in coordination with the monthly test of the statewide outdoor siren warning system. During this test, all warning sirens sound a 45-second steady tone. If you hear this tone in circumstances other than a test, tune to any local radio or television stations for emergency information and instructions. Hawaii's broadcasters voluntarily make their facilities available in times of emergency. We are testing the equipment connecting the stations to the emergency alert system. During an emergency, please pay close attention to official radio and TV broadcasts and to instructions from your emergency response personnel. Do not tie up vital communications by making non-emergency telephone or cellular calls. If you need emergency assistance, call 911. Emergency preparedness information is found near the front of your telephone directory. We return you now to regular station programming.
KHPR Honolulu, KKUA Wailuku, KANO Hilo, KHPH Kailua Kona, and KIPL Lihue.
Hustlers, con artists, scammers, they seem to get more sophisticated and more predatory every day. Hawaiian Electric has seen a marked increase in the number of scams aimed at its customers in recent weeks and is reaching out to the public to stop them. As HECO spokesperson Peter Rosegg told my colleague Chris Vandercook the other day, these criminals are hard to detect and they're well-versed in the ways of the Internet.
I think the ability for people to hide behind mysterious phone numbers and call from anywhere and change their phone number frequently has given them a lot of opportunities, and they've gotten more sophisticated. Sometimes now people get calls, and it actually says Hawaiian Electric or HECO on the telephone ID, so they've gotten more sophisticated. It's pretty much a no-risk scam because it's very hard to find these people. You send off your money to an anonymous kind of Ethernet sort of source, and it's virtually impossible to catch these people. So it's gotten more sophisticated. They're aiming at larger businesses and institutions, and also always trying to hit on the small business. We're in one of the upswings that happens from time to time.
Even if you traced the phone call back to a source, it would probably be pretty easy to wiggle out of responsibility for that call.
Sure. And people buy and sell phones, drop off numbers. They've gotten very sophisticated in terms of hiding themselves. So it's unfortunately, a pretty profitable business to be in, scamming people, and you never have to see them face to face. We're seeing a lot, and we're just trying to give our customers a warning that
sure.
The only way to protect yourself is to be very careful.
Well, Peter, let's give a quick outline of scams that you're seeing lately.
Sure. Somebody calls up and says, we're calling from Hawaiian Electric. And as I said, the phone may show that it's a Hawaiian Electric ID. And they say, you know, you're behind on your payment. If you don't pay within an hour, we'll have to cut off your service. And sometimes they'll say, we'll send somebody by to pick up the money. But then they'll call back and say, no, we can't send that person by. So you have to go over to the convenience store or to the drugstore or mm-hmm. supermarket and use a certain kind of payment. And these are the kinds of payments that don't leave any record. And some of the drugstores, Long's, for example, they've been training their managers to keep an eye out for people that buy these things that don't look like they should. But, you know, there's only a certain amount that they can do. You know, if somebody wants to buy one of these things legitimately, and it's really, you know, hard to stop them from doing that.
Money orders are equivalent to cash.
Right. Once you've put sent them into the system, they are cash, equivalent of cash, and they're taken out at the other end, and there's very little or no record. And again, by the time law enforcement can get to wherever they think this might have gone, there's no trace of whoever might have taken it. So it's a very well thought out scam, and I'm sure it's being perpetrated on other kinds of businesses, but we think utilities across the nation, frankly, are very much susceptible. There's a cohort, a bunch of utilities that are working together because we see it all over the country, and it's hard to know where it's coming from. Probably not from within the state, probably from somewhere else. Who knows? So the pressure is just on. The threat is we'll turn off your power right when you need it the most, and you've got to act very quickly. Don't take time to think this over. And if you say, well, I think I paid, they say, no, your payment's not here, or it may have gone into the wrong account. And you say to them, well, I never got a notice or anything. We says, well, we've sent the notice, but you must have missed it. And now if you don't pay up, we're going to cut off your service. And if you're a small business, like a little lunch counter or that sort of thing, they'll try to call it at noon when you're busiest and when you can least afford to have that power cut off. And they will be quite insistent. And the only real solution to that is to hang up.
You know, Peter, I'm going to take a wild guess that a lot of these are targeted at immigrant populations.
I think that's right. I think people, timing to get businesses that are going to be in busy periods, and I think people that may or may not speak English that well, that are not that conversant with how to protect themselves, I think those are prime targets, no question.
You know, because it's they also might be used to governments where they came from that are that draconian, yeah?
That may be. But, you know, they're trying to run a small business and, they think they paid, but maybe they, maybe I missed the payment. If you're a single proprietor or a small business, family business, you've got 1,000 things on your mind. And in other cases, you know, maybe you're a small company and somebody else is supposed to be paying your bills for you. Well, you think they paid, but you don't know for sure. So, yeah, I think they are pretty clever about going after the least able to kind of just tell them where they should go.
Pretty cruel, isn't it? But that's why they call them criminals.
Yeah, that's true.
Are there also scams, Peter, where they, use the internet payment to reach into your pocket this way?
Yeah, I think they need you, the customer, to take an action.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes the customer to initiate something. But anyway, they can make that money move from your hands to their hands. They're not picky. But that's why the first line of defense is the customer himself. We tell people if they're the least bit suspicious, hang up and don't call back the number they gave you. Call back our customer service number, which you'll find in the phone book, you'll find on our website, you'll find on our app. And we'll be glad to look up your account and tell you, you know, well, you don't owe anything. You're all paid up. The last thing we want to do is turn off anybody's power because we realize how essential that is. So in cases where customers are in arrears, we will work with them to get a payment plan or to for customers, residential customers, we can direct you to some social service agencies who will help you, you know, get over this current problem until you get in better economic shape. And we would never, ever call and say we're going to turn off the power in an hour or 2 hours. That's just not the way we work. It's a long process with a lot of notice and a lot of warning. And as I said, the last thing we want to do is turn you off. It's a hassle for us. And if you do get turned off for, you know, lack of payment, then it's going to cost you even more to get started again. So we don't want to subject our customers to that. We don't want them to be scammed. We don't want them to send money to somebody else. Pay your bill. Don't pay any more than you owe us.
And when in doubt, call HECO, right?
Absolutely. Call. Hang up on somebody. Don't call the number that they've given you. They very often will give you a callback number, and it could be an 808 number. It could sound like it's a legitimate business number. But go to the phone book and look up Hawaiian Electric Customer Service, or go to the website, www.hawaiianelectric.com. Or we have apps now at the Apple Store and the Google Store, and you can do your business online. And you can also go in to make payments in some legitimate stores, some supermarkets and so forth. They're all listed on our website. If you have a bill that you've paid, the phone numbers are there. It's all, you know, it's all spelled out for you. We're trying to make it as easy as possible for people to get in touch with us.
Peter Rosig works in corporate relations for Hawaiian Electric Company. He's also a member of the Community Advisory Board of Hawaii Public Radio. That is the conversation for this Pledge Drive Monday. I'm Bill Dorman in for Chris Vandercook, and now we will take you back to Pledge Central and my colleague Ray Cruz.